You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 13 June. We've now got US PPI this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Peter 308 has Herenia Capital Advisors. Better than expected US inflation data. Market loved it. Dot plot, which came out later when FOMC said no rate increase. I don't know, only one cut this year. Fred Razak, he's chief trading strategist at CM Trading. Problems with Tesla, and it's not all Elon Musk. And then Sini Shapakrasamy from Momentum Investments. Recent IMF and Saab updates, both moving to cautious optimism, I think we could say. This show is brought to you via Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. DStv has lost 1 in 6 premium subscribers since 2021. The number of active days per subscriber across its SA base is also down, equating to a full 4 months where subscribers simply aren't active. Business Day, Telkom expects full year earnings to treble, share price up 5% on the back of that. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.9%, NASDAQ up 1.3%. In the East, it is mixed. Sydney off 0.2, Tokyo down 0.1%, Hong Kong is up 0.3%, and Tencent 1.25% higher. Commodities mostly red, gold 2,329, Brent 82.27, platinum 9.52, and palladium $1 higher, 9.02. Rand 18.40, Bitcoin 67,500, top 40 opening call, red open, 140 points or 0.2% to the down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Redenhurst from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning time. So two data points yesterday. The US inflation came in better than expected. That absolutely excited the market, excited our market. The Rand went stronger. And then later we had the FOMC. No change to interest rates. That was no real surprise. The dot plot, which kind of gives an expectation of when we'll see rate cuts, now suggests only one cut this year. We started the year looking for 6. We're only going to get 1. Markets don't seem to care.
Morning, Simon. I think let's start. And I said last night to somebody that I find it hard to believe that reality is the way that it is. And maybe we're just entering into an era, or are in an era, where so many things have happened that has never happened before. Yeah. But we just don't know what to do, right? I mean, if you just to put into context, the amount of money that was printed since 2020 to date is like the majority of all US dollars ever created was made in the last 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. And somehow inflation is not 1,000%. I mean, if this was Zimbabwe, for example, it would have hyperinflated by now, right? But somehow it hasn't. It's hard to actually wrap my head around this, and I don't necessarily truly understand why, right? But in any case, I digress. So last night, inflation came in at 0.1% better than expected. so contextually, yeah, it's not by much, right? 0.1% better on core inflation as well as on sort of headline inflation. So it's a bit better, but not massively so, right? However, as you say, the market took that as good news and rallied really hard off the back of that. Later, the FOMC meeting came out. And I think what's important to note is that the FOMC communicates rates and decisions with us every 6 weeks, but only releases a forecast around every 3 months.
Yeah.
And that forecast was the dot plot, which was now made yesterday, right? And as you said earlier, we came into this year expecting a huge amount of rate cuts. It hasn't happened. I've been wrong. I think a lot of us have been wrong about how many, I think all of us have been wrong truly about how many rate cuts we expected. And we're now down to a forecast of 1. So yeah. Again, the market just grabbing onto that and saying, rate cuts are coming, let's trade higher. I don't want to be that guy, but if, recency bias does what recency bias does, we haven't seen any rate cuts. We've been hanging on to hope. And now the Fed says, well, we might see one data dependent. And I'll be honest with you, if inflation is only coming down by 1 basis point, by 10 basis points, I don't see how that is actually going to lead to a rate cut unless inflation starts to cool off even more from where we are now. So I think it's relatively unlikely that we see a rate cut. And also, I just want to add one more thing. If you look at historic data, and this is where I say, I don't know if this is going to work, because historically, if you look at this stuff and you say, oh, okay, well, this is how it's worked in the past, there's a very high probability that it's going to do the same in the future. But, you know, these days are different to what it was 100 years ago, I suppose. But historically, if you look at the U.S. economy and sort of their economic cycle, whenever their rate cutting cycle begins, the recession begins, right? Because you've got to keep in mind that when the rates are being increased, that's because the economy is running hot, it's very strong, there's so much demand in it, and things are so good that prices keep going up, and they want to contain that, so they put up rates, until such point that they've slowed economic activity enough that they feel that they need to now start stimulating it again by cutting rates. And that's generally because, you know, things are getting a lot tougher. So by the old school way of thinking, a rate cut is technically bad for markets, if this is at least the historic correlation with it, right? But again, like I said, the last 4 years has been everything but normal, right? So is that going to work again this time? I don't know. I mean, I would guess yes. But I guess we'll have to see.
You left scratching your head. I mean, I take your point. And I suppose in one sense, it is just so much money out there chasing equities that the market's almost oblivious to it. Of course, at some point, quote a cliche, the piper needs to be paid. We'll leave it there. Petri Odenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today. Should markets be worried? Petri's confused, which is probably the right response. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
When you stay invested over time in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Fred Razak. He's chief trading strategist for CM Trading. Fred, appreciate the time today. Tesla share price been under, I suppose we could say, severe pressure. Many are blaming Elon Musk, but you're not quite so convinced by that story. You're saying we've seen a bit of sort of stagnation in the advancements that initially really did define that brand as the first sort of really viable electric vehicle available to the general populace.
So I think it's a couple of things and a couple of issues that is stagnating the company. I don't think it's Elon Musk himself, but it could be always attributed back to the chief. But I think it's more lack of innovation. Mm-hmm. I think that their competition has actually caught up to them to a certain degree. And they kind of put a lot of, I wouldn't say it bombed, but it didn't really take off as much as the iconic symbol was supposed to. So it's a combination of a few factors, I think, that have resulted in their situation right now.
You mentioned Cybertruck there. I mean, it also started life as what, I think a $35,000 truck, ended life as $100,000, and does perhaps show some broader issues within the company and ability to not so much innovate, that was innovative, but to deliver on the promises.
Like I said, it's a few things. It's the fact that they haven't updated the cars. The style of the cars haven't been updated at all. So it's a combination of things that have really contributed to the stagnation of the company. Now, I would add also that Elon Musk has been actually less focused on the business as he's trying to, you know, scale into other businesses. And, you know, that is always a very tricky and very unique kind of strategy because, you know, there is a Jack Welch who did completely irrelevant businesses, but every time he went into it, he did really well and he succeeded in anything he touched. And, you know, time will only tell if Elon Musk can recreate that kind of success in different types of categories of businesses.
But also just broader. I mean, I think, you know, he's got SpaceX, he's got Twitter, or X as he calls it, XAI, his artificial intelligence business. All of these in of themselves would be a full-time position. And he's juggling a lot of balls, and he may or may not be a genius, but it's still a lot of juggling to happen.
Absolutely. And that's on one side, but there's also the other side, that he's so unpredictable. And I think that what makes him so fearful for his competition, because he's able to, you know, just re-innovate. And, you know, I've said this before, but I think that, you know, Tesla, if I was to compare it to another company, I would compare it to Apple. When Apple came out, they were innovative, they were ahead of the curve, and then they kind of lost their way and they had to recreate that. And I think that that will, for Tesla to be relevant in the next 5 to 10 years, I think Tesla's going to have to do that. If you look at the design of their cars, it hasn't changed much. There's small variations to it, but they have to do something iconic. And I think that that's what they were hoping the Cybertruck would do, which it stalled. So they're going to have to come up with another, you know, back to the drawing pad and, you know, kind of see what they can do. And like I said, the amount of pressure they're feeling from competition, like BYD, which is Build Your Dream, or Rivian, which is another truck company that's an electric truck, is just outstanding. So I think they've got tremendous pressure from other competitions that are putting some pressure on the company.
Yeah, that's a great point, because when Tesla started, it was Tesla. It was them only. There'd been a couple of others, the Volt, the Leaf and the like, but really it was all around Tesla. Now they've got that competition. And we're even seeing sort of the traditional US ICE vehicle manufacturers getting in, aside from the BYDs and the Rivians and the like. It suddenly is, you know, when you build the future, everyone else kind of joins you on that place.
Yeah, and beyond that, I would say that also, to their credit, they do have brand loyalty to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like if you see some of the users that have bought Teslas before, that upgraded to new Teslas, and that is still a market that has yet to be seen to show us whether or not they could, you know, sustain those type of repeat customers moving forward.
And I liked your point around Apple, because Apple was completely lost in its way. They brought back Steve Jobs, who really was a visionary, and he kind of proved the point that companies can get a second chance, that they need to innovate, they need to do a lot, but it's not lost. It's not a case of it is over.
No, I think the basic elements are there. I mean, he's an innovative person and he's always forward thinking, and, you know, he surrounds himself with those type of people. So I really believe to the core, the company can reinvigorate themselves and re-innovate themselves. The question is will they have enough time to do that, you know, in the situation that they are up against the ropes? That's the question that needs to be really answered. And I think time will only tell.
Yeah, I take your point. I suppose there are risks, but I suppose there's also equally opportunity. And certainly it's not over for Tesla. They need to grab those opportunities. Fred Razak, Chief Trading Strategist, CM Trading. Appreciate the time today.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Sanisha Pakris. I'm the economist at Momentum Investments. Sanisha, appreciate the time, as always. Let's start offshore with the IMF. Global financial stability has receded. They say risks still remain, but that things are looking better than they were. That kind of ties in with what I think we're sort of feeling, perhaps, globally.
Thanks so much, Simon. So I think, you know, that is really in line with what the International Monetary Fund was also flagging in terms of their growth and inflation risks. And if we look at where the growth and inflation numbers were pegged for their April report, they did say that, you know, the downside risks from here appear to be a little bit more balanced with the upside risks relative to the October run of their forecasts, when there were still extreme downside risks to growth and significant upside risks to the inflation side of things. This ties in very well with their sentiment around global financial stability risks, which they also believe have receded since October of last year. They nevertheless say that there are still some risks prevalent in the system, And predominantly, these are coming through from the commercial real estate market. Nevertheless, they say that they believe that the banking sector on an aggregate level seems to be a bit more well positioned to absorb any particular shocks that come out of commercial real estate. But nevertheless, you could still get some spillover effects that happen in your smaller regional banking sector. And I think they flagged this because we have been worried about the regional banking sector post the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, but they are flagging that this is unlikely to be a major systemic risk. They've also noted that, you know, between asset classes seem to be performing very much in line with one another. So not giving you that diversification benefit. We say that their correlations are high with one another. And so that could also potentially lead to some fallout. If you have a collapse in one particular asset class, you could see a collapse in other asset classes, unlike at times when they're act against each other and you can actually see some offset. They've also picked some risks around residential real estate. Mm-hmm. However, in many markets, we have seen, you know, fixed rate mortgages making up a bigger percentage of mortgages. So if you don't sell your house and, you know, accumulate a higher interest burden, that wouldn't affect those markets as much.
You mentioned Silicon Valley Bank. Embarrassingly, I'd forgotten about it. And of course, Credit Suisse, which was the big one. And those were the giant fears a year ago. If we bring it home, our Reserve Bank, SARB, they say our financial system remains resilient. This is the period to ending May. Notwithstanding, we had local elections at the end of May, and of course, all the global elections going on. I suppose resilient is the operative word there.
Indeed, I think this is quite comforting news at a time when we do have a lot of geoeconomic uncertainty globally, but also, as you say, playing out with our domestic general elections and quite a lot up in the air for now. So the Financial Stability Review is a study that's conducted by the South African Reserve Bank twice a year. So the last review was done in October and that was published in November. And now we've had, you know, the May outcome published in June. And basically what they've said is that the financial system in South Africa has remained relatively resilient in the six-month period under review. They looked at the six systemically important banks in South Africa in the November run, and that basically includes your Absa, Capitec, FirstRand, Investec, Nedbank, and Standard Bank. And they basically said that these banks remain resilient even in what they call an adverse domestic scenario. This time around, they ran the same analysis for the major insurance companies, nine insurance companies, including the life insurance firms. And there they also found, from a solvency perspective, that we do remain relatively resilient. Now, when they talk about an adverse domestic scenario, they capture, you know, a severe economic contraction in that calculation, you know, more on the energy crisis coming through, a higher risk premium. They also look at adverse global scenarios, which could capture something like a stagflationary environment of higher inflation and lower growth, or more geopolitical tensions playing out, higher inflation risks coming through from higher oil prices or commodity price shocks. And even these kind of circumstances, they believe that South Africa's financial system will remain resilient even under those adverse shocks.
The one thing, they also say they're optimistic about the energy crisis. They're also relatively optimistic that we will get off our grey listing in 2025.
Indeed. So in terms of the energy crisis, we've heard the Reserve Bank, even at their monetary policy committee meetings, suggesting that the growth detraction from the energy crisis has expected to lessen for 2024. You know, not too long ago, they were expecting the energy crisis to shave off around 0.8 percentage points of growth for this year. And they're now only looking for it to shave off 0.5 percentage points of growth. I would warn, however, that, you know, the logistics crisis has become the new Achilles heel of growth. And, you know, we are seeing, you know, a substantial portion of growth being shaved off because of those logistic impediments in rail and in port. With regards to the, you know, the FATF grey listing, I think, you know, from a technical compliance perspective, you know, we can, I guess, easily pass that test. But in terms of the effectiveness of our laws and regulations, I think that test is a little bit more harder to pass. So we've seen, you know, a number of failed attempts to prosecute those that have been linked to state capture. But on the positive side, we've seen more trained investigators. We've seen, on the technical compliance side, amendments made to the Financial Intelligence Center Act, you know, know, more professions being covered, more of those technical gaps being covered. You know, from that perspective, it's an easy test to pass. But I think we are still a bit on the back foot in terms of the effectiveness of our laws and regulations. And of course, you know, the plenary meets in March 2025. So that's basically the date at which we need to be able to tick those boxes as well.
Okay, so I'll add March to my calendar. You mentioned logistics and a quick last one. They also mentioned, Saab mentions, the state-owned enterprise's share of newly issued non-government bonds has dropped quite markedly over the last decade. And this shows they're struggling to raise capital, which either puts the SOEs under pressure or puts the fiscus under pressure as they kind of act as the backstop.
100%. So within this risk parameters that the South African Reserve Bank has drawn out, they have highlighted that South Africa's fiscal position has deteriorated over the last decade. And in fact, that deterioration sticks out like a sore thumb relative to other emerging markets. And of course, we're now paying a lot more interest on that debt. And a very big portion of that deterioration is because of the spending demands that have come through from our state-owned entities. And the fact that they are largely incapable of raising their own funds to support their capital expenditure plans means that a very large portion of those government guarantees could in fact end up above the line on our debt line for government. And that's a problem for the financial services sector, because if you increase the borrowing costs for government, it effectively increases the funding costs across the entire financial system.
Yeah, I take your point on that. Absolutely. Cynthia Pakrasami, economist, Momentum Investments, always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. We were chatting with Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments yesterday. We're talking gold, and she made a great point around perhaps it's time more to focus on gold miners than the gold ETFs. But we asked you, are you bullish on gold? Almost half said yes, very bullish. A third said a little bit, but maybe getting a little thin. The rest said no gold for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Why you need to pay up for quality.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.